This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode. Thank you for tuning in. I got a good friend here and just a little quick intro to him because he'll tell you all about his journey, but I owe a lot of where I am today and a lot of stuff that has gone right for me career-wise to this guy, to this amazing guest of mine. When I had my clothing brand, I was figuring out how to pivot towards more online and where I want to get started. And it was my guest, Andy, who told me, hey, there's a thing called Facebook ads that we're trying to really play around with and experiment in. You should really test this out. I was like, okay, cool. I'm interested. And he sent me down a rabbit hole that's maybe like, what, 7 years later now, which is just crazy. And as people listening know, I have an agency primarily run on paid media and Facebook ads. So I don't think maybe this podcast would have happened down the road because I love interviewing people and talking to people, but I don't think my career would be where it is right now, or I'd have any of the success and any of the good from what I love doing right now. I think I'd maybe be working for someone else or trying to figure out how to build a clothing brand even more in a horrible space. But I owe a lot to you, Andy. So I really appreciate you. You're a smart, smart dude. Thank you so much for coming on here and for doing this. And I know I've thanked you a lot privately, but I wanted to do it as an intro to you. So thank you so much.
Very kind words, Jason. I really appreciate it. And I never would imagine in my wild dreams when I said yes to taking that call with you those years ago that here we would be today. And to see the success that you had and all that, it's really rewarding for me, and it's awesome to see. And I applaud you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It means a lot coming from you. So you're the brand director for Gary Vee and the head of Team Gary Vee. And I think we don't need an introduction to who Gary is. I think everyone knows who Gary is. We know he runs a successful agency, and obviously we see him everywhere. So explain, what's a brand director? What's your role in all that?
Yeah, in all honesty, I think one day I just came to Gary and I said, I wanted a title. I wanted a different name. I just had I think my title was analyst, and I had been working for him for like a year and a half on alongside D-Rock and just creating content for his channels and trying to grow his brand across social. So my day-to-day is really just trying to scale Gary's ideas and inputs and business acumen and really lean into his brand with the 19 other individuals that are on Team Gary Vee, as we call ourselves. So we put out content every day around Gary and try to learn and test and optimize all the content that we have across all his channels.
So let's talk about that journey for a second, because when you got there, I know your story of how you first started working with Gary, because I spoke to you about it. So tell us your story about how you started going there. And then when you got put on the team, what did that team size look like versus where it's at now? Describe that journey a little bit.
Yeah, so I went to Virginia Tech and I took a wine course at Virginia Tech. And that professor made us watch Gary's Wine Library TV videos and take online quizzes. So literally it was like, how does Gary Vaynerchuk describe the Chardonnay? And there'd be a list of adjectives and it'd be like D. So that's how I got put onto Gary. I graduated school, like most college graduates. So I was like, what the fuck do I do now? I traveled abroad. I started meeting people, blogging, making money online. I've rediscovered Gary through that because I was interested. I was like, oh, this could be cool. Entrepreneurship, you know? And he just really resonated with me. His messages really resonated with me. And I realized that he was a lot more than a wine guy. He was actually a businessman. And as someone that was identifying as an aspiring entrepreneur who still really didn't know how to run a business, I figured it might be a good idea to try and work for someone who did. So Gary tweeted one day, what can I do for you? And I responded back, a chance to work for free. He responded, email me. I emailed him. I didn't get a response for 2 months. 2 months later, at midnight, I get an email, my phone dings, it says Gary Vaynerchuk. He asked where I'm looking to live and how little I was willing to work for. I was blessed and fortunate enough to have a brother that was living in New York City at the time. So I said, I'll work for free and I want to live in New York City. Vayner Media at that time was around 100 people, 125 people.
Based just context, what's the size of Vayner Media right now?
900. And we have five offices globally. Okay. Facebook didn't have ads yet. Facebook didn't have video yet. Instagram didn't matter. You know, VaynerMedia was at that time really a community management shop. We'd put status posts on Facebook and on Twitter and then just engage with consumers and gain consumer insights. So that's how I got my start into Vayner. Once Facebook ads came out, I started hanging out with the two guys at the company who were running it because I just figured it mattered. And at this time, I still didn't really have a skill set. I was ambitious and hungry and smart and capable, but I hadn't made my way within the agency or what I really wanted to do for Gary. So learned Facebook ads. I got put on a media team within Vayner, and then Gary would occasionally just email some people within the company like, hey, I want to grow my YouTube subscribers, or like, hey, talk to me about a strategy for an email newsletter. And it's a bunch of really intelligent young individuals on that thread, but I always try to do my best to respond as immediately as possible. Meanwhile, I'm just Googling most of the shit on the side, like how to grow YouTube subscribers, stuff like that. And so I think I made a little name for myself. And then D-Rock made a free video for Gary. He joined the team. And then at the time, there was a designer, there was D-Rock, and he had a copywriter, Steve Unwin. And then Gary asked if I could join his team full time. And I slotted in as sort of like a strategist and his media performance, running Facebook ads for Gary. And that's where I hit the ground running for 3 years. It was really a 4 or 5 person team. Then it scaled into 11 person team. And now we are at 20 people as of today.
That's incredible. And so I think what's crazy about it is you asked. And I think most people would have seen that tweet and they're like, man, I want something, but they're afraid to ask.
100%, bro. And it's like, well, that's what I was thinking about with how, like, you so nicely started off this podcast and giving me credit. But it's a combination. Like, you asked, and I was also trying to give him, I said yes. We talk about this all the time. Gary talks about, like, a yes turns into more opportunities. You know, like, I had no idea what it was going to be. You had no idea what it was going to be, but it turned into, like, I think I would say good things for both of us.
I agree. And I think we're both on good paths. And I hope you weren't Googling the answers while you were giving them to me. But if you did, it doesn't really matter. It set us on the right path.
It's just funny because I've been interviewing a lot of candidates this week for creator positions at VaynerMedia. And I just talk a lot about curiosity and learning. Like, there might be a new app that comes out tomorrow. Like, who's the expert on it? Nobody. Who is the expert on Instagram stories when they came out? Nobody. You know, you just have to figure it out and play and test and learn. You know, Facebook, one day you log into Facebook's backend and all of Business Manager looks completely different.
Yeah.
You know, what's this? What's that button? So it's just reps and patterns. But within that, whether it's Facebook ads, Google ads, or organic posting on Facebook or Instagram, you recognize patterns, and those patterns duplicate and resonate for other platforms.
So what's it like? So let's say, I mean, the newest one that came out right now is really TikTok, right? That's the newest one where people are probably doubling or tripling down on.
Are you on TikTok?
I am, not as much as I should be. But yeah, I'll let you answer and then I'll answer why I'm not, because it will probably be the same reason. So when TikTok comes out, something like that comes out, Gary obviously has his finger on the pulse. He has a good team that has their finger on the pulse, guys like you that know what's going on. You bring it to him, you're like, Gary, TikTok's hot. Or Gary comes to you guys and says, TikTok's hot. I want to get in on this. I want to start learning. What's that process like? How do you guys become then the masters of that?
First is you just need to spend all the time listening, meaning like just press every button on the app and really consume how people are using it. And then you start building your own ideas and reverse engineering why you think people like the app, how they're using the app, what they want to see on the app. And then knowing who you are and what you're about, how you think you can use the app yourself. And also just knowing the own, hopefully, skill sets or expertise that you've learned from other platforms and see if it applies to that platform. An example is like thumbnails. I think Instagram thumbnails are really important. You know, when you see an image on Explore feed on Instagram, you're competing with a lot. The one that has the most enticing thumbnail is the one that you're going to click into, which is really going to drive tons of results. Thumbnails on TikTok might even be more important than thumbnails on Instagram. But so once you have that understanding on Instagram, you can apply it to TikTok. And from there, it's just testing and learning. You still want to listen, but you're doing a lot more publishing and posting and doing and reiterating and learning and continuing to grow.
Yeah, so it's for that reason, right? Like, I just haven't had time to sit there and play around on a lot of these platforms. I mean, and we'll get into like the difference. I mean, not everyone could have a team of 19 behind them, right? So we're going to get a little bit tactical. But even a step before that, is there a platform that you don't think you could execute off right off the bat just because it's Gary, right? Like, Gary has that name. He could leverage that to any sort of platform. So is there still like pressure to be good right off the bat and understand it, even though you'll jump to a million quickly?
No. And it's this in the context of Gary, it's different because Gary's the expert. When it's a new app, then it was the new Byte as an example, or even TikTok. If a new app comes out tomorrow, Gary's doing it himself. he's doing the listening himself. He's pressing.
So Gary does all the posts.
Up to a point. Like okay. If it's new, he wants to be educated on it. He wants to press the buttons. He wants to be listening. He wants to reverse engineer what he thinks he should be posting. Also, he wants to hear from Andy K. He wants to hear from A. He wants to hear from Jim. He wants to hear from Sid. He wants to hear from D-Rock on what their opinions are on it. He'll test, taste, and then he'll be like, all right, team, let's put a real strategy in place. But especially when it's something new and for who Gary is, he's the one who's going to be pressing the buttons first and getting a feel for it.
So for people listening, what if they're afraid to make that mistake, right? Like what can they do? Like, I mean, Gary could play around with the buttons and he'll still get 400,000 views, right? And people won't say anything. But if people are afraid to like put out stuff and test.
Well, I would say like the reason that would be the case in terms of numbers of Gary getting that is because he built a real brand. You know, there's a clip of a keynote that Gary said, like if all the apps disappeared tomorrow, but then paper.com came out and he created an account on paper.com, he would have 1 million followers in a second. But it's because he's built so much brand value through content and all these other platforms that allowed him that opportunity. And that, in terms of like, I don't know, how do you overcome fear? You just don't value other people's opinions. Stop. Everyone overthinks everything. You know, like even myself, like I'll debate. There's several posts that I've posted on my Instagram that I can think of like, damn, I don't want to post this. It feels weird, whatever. Insecurities, I tell myself no.
And those usually do the best.
Well, not only that, I post it and then someone messages me, man, that was awesome. That was really dope. And I'm like, man, I almost feel selfish. I wasn't even going to post that, but that actually brought value to that person. You know, and then you just use it as fuel to like continue to go. But the biggest thing that I think might help people to get over is like, it's the only way you actually ever learn. Even Facebook ads, man, like you can really read all these blogs and Loomer and all these people all day long, but it's really just doing it. You know, like $5 budget, invest in a $5 budget, set up a campaign, do it on the back end and learn, you know, and like, dude, it all comes back to just execution. I think so many people spend 90% of their time in learning mode, but the only real learning is by doing it.
So how do you get over that? I mean, like there are people who are listening or watching who sit there and say, I don't want to put out a post and get 5 likes. And they go by these vanity metrics. I wouldn't ask Gary this question because Gary's different, right? But I want to ask someone like you who's involved in the strategy and you probably have some of those insecurities as well. Yeah. What advice do you have for those people?
Look yourself in the mirror, talk to friends, talk to people you love and trust. Listen to the thoughts that you're telling yourself and overcome it. It's all psychology and just securities. Yeah, I don't know how else to better answer it. I think about it all the time. And like when I think about people like Gary, the most successful people in the world, when I think about like a rapper like Russ, a white rapper from Atlanta who just said at 19, 20, started tweeting, I'm going to be the best rapper ever. Like Gary at like age 12 was just decided I'm not going to do this school shit anymore and closed up his book. You know, and I like put myself in that position. I'm like, at 12, would I really have the mental fortitude or strength or awareness or lack of fear or courage to be able to tell my mom and dad that like, I don't care what you tell me, I'm not going to open my book. You know, it's a different thing to be able to have that strength, but it pays off to really just lean into yourself and have the courage to be yourself.
Does that transfer over to the team that you manage? Like, the room to make mistakes, the room to try for the team around Gary's brand? Because I know some people are so, you'll see this. You have some people who have the smallest brand, but they're so close to it, right? Like they're afraid to test. No, it's the wrong color pink. Oh, it's the wrong color code for our blue. They're so afraid to try. Like, you know, I'd imagine when you have a bigger brand, the room for mistakes isn't that high. As someone who runs a team, what's your philosophy around all that?
It really stems from Gary. Like, I mean, you could look at Gary's Instagram right now. We have like a lot of rigor around the content that we pitch him that he decides to post with his own two thumbs. But he also just tests and learns. He does some crazy shit. Like he just took it. Today, he was really pumped. We make content for him, right? One of the posts that's like going to be like one of his top performing posts this week, maybe this month, he just took a screenshot on Instagram stories and posted it. You know, I think the quote was around like a, it was about the year 2020. I'm going to actually look at it right now. Don't cancel the year that woke you up. This is a guy who has a team of creators behind him, and he wanted to do it himself. He typed that, screenshot it, post it. He wanted to test. He wanted to learn. And guess what? Overperformed. Guess what? He'll probably do that again. If I was guessing, I would say in the next week and a half, you will see Gary do another version of him just saying, fuck my team, fuck Andy, fuck D-Rock, fuck it. I'm going to do it myself. Also, not like in the bad way, but he just gets energized.
Yeah. You know? Well, because it's his way of also calling out people with excuses. Like, oh, you think this is all because of my team behind me? Fuck them. Look at this.
All day long.
Yeah.
And like that image, like, bam, just from that, there's a lot of insights. That quote obviously resonates with people. That quote should obviously probably be tweeted out on Twitter. That quote obviously could probably be designed via like a $10, $9, $5 app and put onto Pinterest.
I mean, I imagine you guys being a tight-knit group, right? Like almost like a fraternity for people who work on Team Gary Vee. What does the hiring process look? I mean, I'm sure people listening, I'm sure there are tons of people who would love the opportunity to join the team. What does that look like?
We really look for creators. This is a content game. Even in media, you know, you need one, two really, really smart black and white math guys, analytics, and then you just need a crazy amount of content, impactful content, smart content. So I look for people that are just really, really hungry to make content in the versions that they like and want to get better and want to get stronger. But it also comes back to curiosity because again, tomorrow Snapchat's gone, but Snap Poof comes up and it's a whole thing. And they need to be curious and excited enough to want to know what these buttons do. Cause that's how you find these small hacks. Like a good example is LinkedIn for a while. For whatever reason, if you posted something that was like less than 140 characters, it was actually like 100 characters, it was really limiting, you would get crazy reach, like 5x reach. And it just so happened, like Raghav, shout out Raghav, who's our copywriter on our team, he was curious enough to just like start playing around and he's actually in the apps. You know, I think a lot of people use these third party. He was in LinkedIn and he did a short blurb and it skyrocketed. And then he did it again and it skyrocketed. And then he says like, hey team, short posts on LinkedIn are crushing right now. But if he was just following the guidelines of what every other LinkedIn expert is saying or what everyone else is saying, he never would have gotten there.
And that's the problem, right? I mean, most people follow a lot of different businesses and owners. And if 90% of businesses fail, why would you want to follow that route, right? Like when everyone zigs, you got to zag. And mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that you and the team do really, really well. But when something like that happens, when you find that stuff out, it's really inspiring because it's not like you guys have like a perfect strategy and you go to Gary with it and you're like, here's the strategy, here's the playbook on how to do it. It's really, yeah, you want to know, it's like testing. It's like when someone asks me about Facebook ads, what works? Test.
Everyone thinks that there's an answer. There's no answers to anything. It's just continually figuring it out. It's a perpetual motion of figuring it out, figuring ourselves out and figuring out what works. And like Gary says it, like, I think he's like the least replicable version of how to build businesses. Very few people build businesses the way Gary builds businesses. And I wouldn't recommend it to 99% of people, you know, and his message is like, figure out what works for you. You know, like he's very charismatic. He's very leaning with EQ and emotions and speed and work ethic. And other people build businesses working 9 to 6, probably a little more than that, but are really process oriented and super structured and super focused. That's not how Gary rolls.
The last question of Gary, and then I want to get super tactical with you.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably ask, you know, he's very empathetic. He has that open door policy. I want to put it on the record because there's a lot of people who doubt that and be like, oh, it's just a face for the camera.
Yeah.
Let's just go on. You're probably one of the closest people inside to him. How much of what we see, you know, Gary's videos is really Gary in real life?
100. Videos that you see of Gary is Gary just living his real life. It might have a title and captions on it, but like, it's crazy. Like Gary doesn't really allocate, I would say 2% of his time is actually geared towards creating content for his brand, for him. 98% of the time, he just lives his life and we're happy to be filming it. And then we try to create content off of it. It's really him, you know, like this is a really emotional time in America. And we had a team all hands. 900, 750 people were on a private YouTube link where he was addressing the company. And I've never been more proud to be a part of that organization and to work for Gary for his leadership and the things that he spoke and just creating transparency for everyone on how he's visioning this company. And it was rewarding for me.
Perfect. Love that answer. And I just wanted to let the listeners know that it's 100% real. When it comes to the businesses listening or someone in fitness space, whatever it is, how important is building or investing in building a brand?
The most, or else you'll go away. You know, like I think it's changed, but boy, like when we first talked, if you could figure out Facebook ads, you could create a real profitable business quickly, you know, but then when the well dries up, you can't. But then if you have a brand, it doesn't matter because you still have customers. You know, like Apple doesn't need to run Facebook ads because they have a real brand, but they build the brand through really good products. I think of sales and marketing is short term. Brand is forever. And that's why like Gary's obsessed with IP because I don't know, I'm trying to think of a nostalgic brand that everyone can think of that actually still has real value to it if you can just reimagine it in the 2020 world. Yeah, and I think we're so enamored by short-term things, you know, and I think brand is not short-term things. Brand is posting every day for 2 years and nobody caring at all, always having 5 likes for 3 years straight. And then you get a little more, and then you get a little more. And then 10 years in, people might start giving a fuck. You just have to be comfortable with it.
I think just people look for the latest hack and tactic. And I think brand is the difference between outspending versus outliving your competitors. I don't think many businesses realize the importance of having a brand around them and just think they could get by on the short-term metrics. And
well, it's also really tough too, because like, how do you measure brand? You know, like I can try and give you answers, but it's really just like hearts. How do you win hearts and minds, and how do you measure that?
And that's what builds a company, right? It's scaling the unscalable. It's measuring the things that can't be measured. That's the difference maker. That's where people don't go the extra mile in it. How does building a personal brand differ from building, let's say, a business brand?
The stories that you tell, it's really the same mechanisms. It's still telling stories around your interests, passions, things that you resonate with. I think with a personal brand, it should be easier because you can self-identify, hopefully more easily, with what your strengths are and the stories that you want to tell versus if you're an insurance company, you have to be creative. You know, you have to actually stretch a mile and actually think maybe we should build a content brand around golf because of a lot of our customers like golf. So it's not about like talking about insurance. It's talking about how to improve your golf swing, comma, by the way, we have insurance. You know, so it's a different exercise, maybe creatively, but at the end of the day, it's creating content and storytelling.
I guess the question is, what hat do they wear, right? Am I trying to build my personal brand? Am I trying to build my business brand? What gets posted on what? That's always like the million-dollar question that everyone asks. Like, where do I post this stuff? Do I post it on my business page or do I post it on my personal?
That is such a common question. Even I'm thinking of a friend. He's a DJ and he's also a fitness guy. And he's like, I'm making this other page. I'm like, no, bro, it's you. You're a fitness dude. Post the fitness shit. You're a DJ. Post the DJ shit. You're a Facebook marketer. Post the Facebook marketing shit. It's you. You know, that's how I think about like your personal accounts. Don't have 15 personal accounts based on your own interests, but they all say Andy K. I think it's just going to be manageable. Insofar as like separating the brand and growing the brand versus growing the personal brand, my advice is always to like lean into one and really focus on that. I'd rather you be crushing one than having two that you feel like you're being too scattered and you can't actually crush it. And then it just goes back to what's most important. If the business is what you really care about and it's your business, then I would grow that first, you know, but there is something to be said for growing your personal brand, which then also impacts the business.
I always just tend to always lean towards the personal because I like the leverage, right? If the business fails or goes away, you kind of lose everything that you kind of built up a little bit, but with your personal, you take it wherever you go.
I fully agree with that. Yeah.
So for people watching and they're like, okay, great. Sounds good. How do I do all this? It's like Gary has a team of 19 people. Let's get tactical. Gary's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Should everyone be everywhere?
You should prioritize where you want to be based on where your customers are and then go all in on that 110%. Meanwhile, taste where you can so that you're learning, because that platform is eventually going to be less impactful and you're going to need to be able to pivot. And hopefully you already have your TikTok account set up. Hopefully you already have your Pinterest account set up. You know, you need to be tasting because you might be surprised what happens. You'd say Pinterest doesn't matter because it's all female, but all of a sudden you realize that there's actually a lot of dudes right now Googling like how to cook at home, you know, during quarantine. But yeah, you prioritize. You can't be everywhere, so you should prioritize.
And if you had to give your opinion based off what's working right now, what are the top three in order?
I would caveat that it would depend on your business and like who you're trying to sell to, but TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn.
In that order.
Yeah. Like TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn. TikTok, you're never going to have as good of an opportunity as you do today to build a brand quickly.
So set the record straight. Everyone who's listening thinks TikTok's for like 9-year-old and that they're like 9-year-old nieces on it. Like, especially when Musical.ly first came out before all that, everyone thinks it's like 8-year-old singing and dancing. That's not me. I'm not going to sing and dance. It's impossible for me to build on this.
Of course it skews young. Of course there's a bunch of 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds watching people dance. There's also a lot of 19-year-old dudes on it. There's also a lot of older people on it. You know, I know a couple accounts of like some 60-year-olds just doing some funny shit and they're crushing. I also know of someone who was on Gary's Tea Time recently who draws and does, she has an Etsy shop. She's an artist and she like sews and makes some really cool handmade clothing. She was having trouble, no sales. And she hit a video on TikTok. It hit 1 million views. Her sales skyrocketed. It wasn't even a sales oriented video or anything. It just took off so much that people were so interested. Clicked into her TikTok profile. She was smart enough to have the URL to her Etsy shop. She made like 5K in sales that day. I was thinking a lot about it with Snapchat because I have a real estate friend who's been crushing it on TikTok. Everyone always used to think Snapchat's for dick pics and nudes and like, why would you ever try and post real estate content? Oh, look what happens. There's tons of real estate agents that have sold $1 million listings on Snapchat. It's attention. People are looking there. I think it's history repeats itself, man. Facebook used to be for Facebook kids only. Now, not one college kid will ever go on it.
And it's funny because like if an 8-year-old's on it, you got to think also if you're a parent, if your 8-year-old kid's on it, you're on it too. Because you're watching your kid. So for every 8-year-old on it, there's probably like a 45-year-old, 50-year-old on there as well watching.
That's a great point. 100%. Yeah.
Paid versus organic.
Yeah.
Do you have to do paid? Like how much of Gary's stuff is paid? Like, I mean, he's a bit different. He could get high reach organically, but I mean, if someone's listening, they're like, hey, can I really grow my brand organically these days?
100%. Yeah. When I think about like a media company, right? Or there's content and there's distribution. I can make an Instagram account and have 7,000 posts and have them all be fly. But if I have zero followers, like who's hitting it, you know? But at the same time, there's still ways to get free distribution. That's what community management is. That's what going into hashtags and leaving meaningful comments is. That's what going into Twitter search and saying, hey, I see that you like heart hats. I have a collection of heart hats.
I wore this for you.
I would love to. I
don't even know where I got this. Someone sent it to me and it was like.
Missing the exclamation mark, but it's like.
It's missing the exclamation mark, but it's like spot on, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's hacks to do free organic distribution. And the deltas change, right? Like I have 5 followers. I put out a post that hit with those 5 followers. They share it. All of a sudden I have 10 followers, you know? So there's levels and levels. And I remember like an example is Gary's first viral video on Facebook. He had 500,000 fans and he had been on the platform since like day one, since like Zucks, like him and Zucks, like we're friends and he got Facebook/Gary. We posted one video that was 1 minute and 30 seconds. The next day he had over 1 million followers. So in one day he had doubled his Facebook following after like 8 years of work. And guess what? The organic reach on those next videos was a lot more. And it was a whole different game then from the amount of people that were reaching before. But it was just the reps and the time and the consistency.
It's funny because I kind of teased this talk a little bit with people like how to grow your personal brand. I think they're going to come in and get a lot of like these hacks and tactics. But sounds like it needs work. This is the underlying fact. And I love that you're saying it is that like go in and start commenting on people's hashtags. Like,
but the tips and tricks and hacks is actually by doing it. By actually posting, you're going to learn more. You're going to like get feedback like, oh, dang, this post didn't work. Oh, dang, this post worked. Okay, I'm going to do more of that. You know, and like, that's just it. And like tips and tricks, like network, build. Think of it's content and distribution. Make better content or you need to think of other ways to get eyeballs on front of your content. And it doesn't necessarily have to be paid.
No, but I love that you said that because let's use paid as an example. People are like, oh, I don't want to pay for distribution. But then they don't want to put in the work to do the distribution. I mean, there's only 2 currencies in the world, right? It's time or money. Like, what are they looking for?
100. But I think people undervalue the damage that you can do with either, you know? It's just time. Like, literally DM 500 people that you think would resonate with your vegan food recipe. Yeah, five of them are going to respond. Guess what? Five is greater than zero. And guess what? Now you have five people that might just be around with you forever.
Which platforms you should be on come down to your self-awareness too. Like if you're hate yourself on camera, TikTok may not be the best thing for you, but if you think you have the best radio voice in the world, maybe you should be podcasting. How much of it comes down to knowing you, who you are, as much as knowing who your audience is?
It's a really good question. You know, like I would go two ways. Like TikTok, you don't like yourself on camera. I think there's other ways you can make TikToks. It doesn't have to be you on camera. Like you can really, really be creative and think outside the box on like what your content formats are. But at the end of the day, I think aside from like skill sets and strengths of like, I really like being on camera and I'm like super charismatic, then you're like, okay, great. You should probably be on YouTube. You should probably be on TikTok. It's also just like, what do you like? Like if you don't like being on Twitter and like trying to come up with really witty copy, you're not going to do it, you know? So it's a combination of like, you are skilled at it, but you also just enjoy it and you feel comfortable doing it.
The next $1 million question that you probably get hit with tons of time is how much content, right? How many times should I be posting a day?
More. It's unlimited.
Like people think like, someone once told me that they saw the best results posting six times a day. And then someone's like, that's ridiculous. Six times a week.
There is a cadence per platform, right? Like you're not going to post 10 times a day in feed on Instagram. I mean, you could like World Star post every 10 minutes. You know, it depends.
Well, everyone's going to see every post.
No, but that's why they do it, because the ones that are the best, they will see. But guess what? World Star doesn't know which ones are the best. And neither does any other fucking person. They just got to post and see what hits. And then they can learn. And then hopefully they gain enough insights to either think, how can I distribute this to more people? Because obviously people really resonate with it. Or how can I replicate this? Because obviously people resonate with this message or format. It's our religion to create as much content as possible. And everyone always, always is like, what about quality? What about quality? And like, I think there is something to be said. Like, yeah, if you want to make a really, really tight 2-minute IGTV cinematic, make people cry, you need time, you know? And like, thus, like you may not get out like shorter form pieces of content. So it's a balance, but the real answer is that quantity leads to quality.
I was just going to say, how do you know what quality is? That's so subjective, right? Like posts that I put out there and I'm like, so like, I'm in love with it. I'm like, this is great. Are usually the ones that flop, right? The posts that I like do like half-assed just because I'm like, I need a post, like do something. I just want to get this off my chest and put it out there. Those do the best. And I'm like, I don't get it. So like, you can't get quality without quantity.
That's correct. Yeah. You know, it's ideas and making. And ideas really matter too. Like having clever, cool, interesting ideas. And then you got to make them. And then you let the market decide. But don't say no. Everyone shuts their own ideas down, man. All day long. I think everyone's the biggest critic. Everyone tells themselves no. Everyone thinks that everyone else is judging them. Meanwhile, we always think like, man, Jason's the man. And Jason's like, fuck, I need to be better.
I think people get so caught up on themselves and they turn themselves down. And then what that leads to is they see someone else grow. And they're like, man, I had that idea. Or I had that post. Or I just didn't do that. And it always leads to regret.
Yeah.
When it comes down to the team putting it out, I want to go back because I don't think we fully answered, because I think I may have interrupted you on question, is when the team puts out stuff and they're testing, what's the leeway for making mistakes? Like what type of posts are considered mistakes? Like how do you judge? What's the KPIs on your content?
In the way you're framing it, there is none, you know, because it was intentional. You know, like Gary doesn't have any room for sloppy mistakes. If we're misspelling shit, I hear about it. The whole team hears about it. If we have like sloppy editing and we were supposed to cut Jason out, but we included Jason in, we don't have any room for that. That's not acceptable. But insofar as like, hey, I'm going to put this title upside down because I think it's interesting and I want to test it, we need to do more of it. Gary says we don't do it enough. Make it purple instead of white.
So what are the KPIs like for people listening, like the key performing indicators? Like what are you judging good content by?
A, it depends on the platform, and B, yeah, we measure it based on the performance analytics of the platforms, right? And like, hey, this post performed really, really well, but I don't want people to get to think that that's the only thing that we value, you know, because there's posts that you can put out that aren't going to perform well, that are really important to put out still, because it's going to put your brand authenticity and messaging in a way that you need to do it. But really it's like performance, you know, like
how many. Does every post have a strategy? there's a strategy behind every single post of like, this is the metrics we're going to look for this post. This is the metrics we're going to look for this post.
So we put out a lot of content. We analyze how it did. We tell Gary how it did. Then Gary decides himself what he likes, what he doesn't like, what he wants to post based on his own authentic filter.
And does he ever go against what's performing?
Yeah. That's what I was trying to hedge it. Like, it's a balance of both. Like, he has a number, he has the math, then he applies his, hey, this is what I'm going to lean into. And then it could change too, right? Because like when we posted it, we didn't have Gary's copy. Copy is such an important tool and component of all of social, and people don't fully understand and grasp just how important it is. Bro, a Facebook ad, I was running Facebook ads for Gary for a USC keynote targeting kids studying MBA. And I had taken like tweets of Gary's talking about school, and I like came up with my own Gary copy, and I ran Facebook ads against it. And the results were like garbage. It was a 20-minute keynote. Like, it was nothing that I was excited to tell Gary about, but I fucking love that keynote, 2015 keynote to USC entrepreneur class. Anyway, so I go to Gary, I'm like, yo, it's not working. And he goes, what's the copy? And I show him, he's like, do this. Goes, types the copy, and it's, wanna win in business, WANNA, you know, dot, dot, dot. Watch the first 13 seconds of this and try not watching the rest. I kid you not, I paid 4 cents for a CPV to 95%. I paid less than a nickel for someone to watch 20 minutes of Gary. And the only thing that changed was the little top sentence at the top of that video.
Okay, so running off that, let's break it down. You have copy, you have the content, and you have the headline, let's say. What's the most important? What's the order of priority for you?
Copy, headline, and the content?
And yeah, and the content.
It all matters, you know? I think of how I would say, like, honestly, the headline is probably the first and foremost important one, because it's the first thing that they see, and that's what's actually going to get them to stop. You know, and you can see these in ad reports, and organically it's differently, but like, you need to create thumb stopping content for them to, for your content to then take over. So like, if I'm thinking about just Instagram, I would be like, 1A is like the headline and thumbnail, because they need to be able to stop and see it. Then hopefully the content is good enough where they actually stick in and it really resonates. Then the copy should take over where I'm like, damn, I want to share this. Damn, this dude knows what he's talking about. Damn, this girl is really cool. Damn, what is this a brand want me to do after I just was able to stop in my feed, consume the content? Oh, the t-shirt's for sale. I'm going to go do that.
Well, kind of wrap here. I want to kind of pick your brains on the three best tips you have for creating good content and getting results on, let's pick the three platforms. Let's do Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn.
Yeah, honestly, I would say like a lot of these apply for all three of them, but it drive engagement and comments. You know, get people to engage, ask questions in your post, ask people what they think about this post, ask people what they want to see more of, get comments and engagement. You know, that's going to get more people to see it, but it's also going to create more feedback. That would be one. Two would be test a bunch of different formats. Like, you can do slide decks in LinkedIn. You can do different size images in LinkedIn. You can do video. You can do GIFs. You can do YouTube links. There's lots of different formats, and they're all going to provide different results, and probably will see different people. You know, like Facebook, a lot of people only want to see videos, so they see a lot of videos. So if you're only posting images, they're not going to see it. I'll switch to Instagram. Be obsessed
with it. I'll pull you back to LinkedIn for a second. How important are hashtags?
They matter. I think that goes into the distribution game. I would say, like, for every post that you put out, you should equally spend that amount of time to try and get a distribution, aka have hashtags. The second that you post it, go into those hashtags and try and engage with relevant people about office chairs, because you're an office chair company or whatever the case may be. Hashtags matter. Like, LinkedIn groups, I'm not even educated on, but I know there's things bubbling up in LinkedIn groups that would be really smart. The second that you put out a post on LinkedIn, to go see if that post is relevant enough to share in an authentic and organic way in that LinkedIn group.
Instagram.
Yeah. And it's all the same shit. Like, it's engage, listen, try and create engaging content. Instagram, you really have to, thumbnail really, really, really matters. Hashtags don't really matter, but it's a good way to identify people that could and should maybe be in your community. Use Instagram stories to drive more awareness and engagement to your in-feed posts. I think people underplay the importance of Instagram stories. I think more people are looking at Instagram stories than in feed even. And it's really depends. Like, I actually don't consume stories at all, but I watch other people and I ask other people, and a lot of my friends just spend all day on stories. And so, like, if you spend a lot of time, 2 hours thinking about, okay, this post is going to be awesome, and you're not thinking about what it looks like on stories, it's flawed. Use Instagram DMs. It's funny how much Instagram DMs have evolved and like how more difficult it is to get in touch with people. But boy, can you still get in touch with people. Test, learn. Like, Instagram TV is super interesting. It's going to continue to matter more. You could put out this whole thing on Instagram TV. It accepts up to an hour long. Like, and it may not perform because who wants to spend an hour on IGTV, but who knows? You know, and who knows? Obviously, Instagram and Facebook and all these platforms, when they release new products, they want them to succeed. That means they're going to try and rig the results to some capabilities to make sure that they succeed. So if they just release IGTV, it's a good assumption that they're probably going to be making sure that IGTV is appearing in people's feeds.
Is weighted that way.
Correct. Yeah.
And TikTok?
TikTok, keep swinging. Yeah, like, captions really matter. Fast. You need to think about how you can tell a minute story in 15 seconds. It needs to be as fast as possible. It needs to be as consumable as possible. Thumbnail really matters. And like, the words that you see on videos really matter. And just listen, like, go into the For You page and you can quickly understand why things popped and just break it down. Like, what was that person's thumbnail? What were the jump cuts they were using? Did they use anything interesting in the copy? And it's funny too, like, I was just talking to an interview candidate and she was like, oh, I haven't gone viral on TikTok yet, but I've had a couple of comments go viral. And she's commenting on posts and she's witty and smart. And she got like 500 followers because she said some like really funny, witty thing on like a viral TikTok video.
People asking, they don't hear you talking about Facebook a lot. So they're asking, is Facebook dead?
Facebook's definitely not dead. You know, I think Facebook marketing is still like, because you know, you can see if it's hitting on Facebook or Instagram, it's still wildly, wildly impactful and successful. And people are spending a tremendous amount of time on there. I don't know what the future holds for Facebook. I'm not one to like demonize it. It's still relevant. You know, I think Facebook groups is really interesting. I'm getting into cards and collecting cards. There's a lot of really cool card collecting groups. It's a different demo. It's a different audience. You know, I think there's different demos and audiences everywhere. And I'm interested to see what happens with Facebook specifically. I think they're rebranding the platform more. I don't know if you guys saw, like, did you watch Last Dance?
Oh, yeah, the Jordan special, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been watching much TV at all, but Facebook had, like, these random commercials, and it was, like, the Facebook company.
Yeah.
Facebook matters.
Any cool tools or anything you recommend for the listeners in terms of, like, searching for hashtags and search in terms of making content, things that, like, you know, your team's using for Gary, that you could provide some secret insights to everyone here?
Honestly, the truth is we actually don't, I was brought up to just use the platforms themselves. Really, we don't use that many other tools. Like, all the analytics you need are within these platforms themselves. There's a lot of third parties that extract them out and you can view them in a dashboard that makes it look nice. StreamYard is really fucking cool, in my opinion, but to be able to.
So we're on.
I know. It's to allow multi-streaming to a bunch of different platforms is wildly cool. I would look at any, BuzzSumo comes to mind. I think NewsWhip, any places that will show you what other content is trending is a good tool set, because it helps you understand what's going on in culture and also how you can reverse engineer what people are really wanting to see, whether it's the message or the format. Twitter search is still underrated. You know, like, I would be interested just to go look at like personal brand. If I thought I was a personal brand expert or I wanted to start a consulting agency or something, just typing in personal brand ? On Twitter search, I would get tons of insights and probably a few customers. Yeah.
Cool. Andy, thank you so, so much for doing this. I'm going to end with one last thing. How do you guys stay so up to date with like culture? I mean, Gary's a 40 something year old. The team that starts at 20 starts getting older. How do you guys stay like, have such a finger on the pulse of what's going on?
Yeah, leadership starts at the top, and Gary's like the youngest 45-year-old dude I've ever met. He's just a different person. Like, he just watches all day long. He is loud and he talks all the time, but he really is watching and listening. But I think for everyone else, it's just like, you got to follow your own passion and interests and listen. Like, Twitter is a real place to, you can type in any keyword on anything that you're interested in, Reddit, all these places, you know, and like, don't draw lines in the sand. Personally, I like consuming culture and learning about it and seeing who's bubbling and who's hot and what's that and what's this. It's something that I enjoy. And I think it's also a skill set too, though.
I love it, my man. Thank you so, so much. Always good to catch up with you and chat with you, but especially thank you for doing this to everyone listening. And I appreciate you.
Dude, I really appreciate the invite. I'm humbled. I'm excited for you to continue this podcast and your journey. And thank you, really.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for paying attention to that episode. Look, if you enjoyed it and you're looking to scale your business to the next level or just a bit stuck, we've worked with businesses and helped scale them past seven figures. So we know a little bit what it takes to grow your business. So if you're looking for a free strategy call with myself or a team member to help you and help get you unstuck or help scale your business, head on over to jportnoy.com and book a free strategy call. I'll see you then.